So, I mean, we gotta get in touch with Skinner for his unofficial channels page. What would you use as a signal for him?
I would totally put, like, a bottle of Mr. Clean in my window.
That's a good one. Yeah, I think I would have to go, I'd go with one of those fancy portraits of a bald eagle and just, like, set it up in the window. I think that would be good.
That's good.
I think I would go for a pair of underwear, like white underwear, like tiny whities.
Over, like, the lampshade?
Over the lampshade.
Or it could be on a laundry line or something outside the house.
Yeah, or you stick it on a flagpole and just stick it out the side of your building. Let them blow
that. That wouldn't be obvious at all.
But okay, so the question is, would he actually come for underwear? I mean, putting it another way. would he actually turn up if you hang out?
I think it depends on if they were his. Oh, guys, we're recording. Hang on.
Oh, wow.
We've got an episode to do. let's get to this. We've got, now that we've got our unofficial channels summoned, let's do this, okay? Welcome to the X-Cast, The Truth is in Here. I'm your host, Sarah Blair, and I'm in love with Assistant Director Walter Skinner.
Spoiler!
Spoiler alert! For this Skinner special, extra special episode that we're doing, we're going in-depth from seasons 1 through 3. We're talking all about our Skin Man. And I've got my unofficial channels open and in touch, and we have our X-Cast agents, Paige Schechter and Clara Cook, here to talk about Skinner. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you all doing today?
Good.
Very well, thank you.
So should we just go ahead and dive in? I've been looking forward. I've been preparing for this all week. I'm so excited for this episode. I feel actually like I've been preparing for this for longer than that, because you know Skinner's my favorite character.
You're kidding.
I know, it's a surprise. Oh, isn't it?
God, didn't know that.
I thought we could start off with just talking a little bit about Mitch Pledgey and how he got the role, and kind of, like, you know, Walter Skinner, try to talk about, you know, what he's got going on before he even gets to Mulder and Scully in the X-Files, and how it leads up to him being in charge of them. So, out of 217 episodes of the entire series, plus the two movies, Skinner appeared in 91 of them. So, less than half. Barely less than half. Plus he was in the two movies. Except, was he really in I Want to Believe? Does that count? I mean, I think they could have used him a little bit more in that movie.
It counts. It's so great when he shows up. It's like, yes!
It is the greatest scene in the whole film. I'm not biased at all.
And he hugs Mulder, so, like, I feel like the hugging is, you know, should be part of the primary part of the movie, to be honest.
Yes.
It's an important scene. Yes.
It is. So important. I don't know. I feel like he's underused in the whole series overall. I think there could have been a lot more of him, but I'm happy with what we got, for sure. So, let's dig in and talk about the enigmatic Walter Skinner. Do you feel like he earns that moniker more than Scully does?
Does he earn the moniker of enigmatic? You know, when in reviewing the episodes for this podcast, I think he's more of a straight line than it may appear on the outside. I mean, and we'll get into this pretty quickly, but at the beginning, he's sort of a block, and he's being watched, literally watched over his shoulder by cigarette-smoking man. But he pretty quickly, This man has a mind of his own, and so kowtowing to whatever cigarette-smoking man is telling him is not really the way he's going to play it. And I think he becomes more of an ally quickly. He picks and chooses what his battles are, but he knows right from wrong.
I think in seasons 1 to 3, he's not all that enigmatic. I think he becomes more enigmatic, actually, as we learn more about him later in the whole series of the all the episodes of the X-Files towards the end. But I think in series 1 to 3, he's much more, he's played much more straight, you know. And you're supposed to think sort of what you see is what you get. I think you're supposed to think that he's being pressured from above, and then obviously he's being pressured from below by Mulder. So as a middle manager in my own job, I can kind of sympathize with that. He's like trying to protect Mulder and Scully, but he's also sort of squeezed from by the people above, so he can't really do a huge amount. But he does pretty well with the limited power that he has. So I think later on, when we learn that he has like a wife and his middle name is Sergei, and he has this sort of relationship with people like Vietnam veterans and all that sort of stuff, I think he becomes more enigmatic then. But in seasons 1 to 3, it's played very straight, I think.
Well, I'm excited to talk about this because I think there's a lot there that is under the surface, and a lot of his words have double meanings. So, I mean, it seems on the surface, and when you watch it from the beginning and you don't know anything about the rest of the series, when we first meet him, I think he does seem kind of straight-laced, and it's not until later on that you really understand that he's got a lot more going on just under the surface. I think on the audio commentary for Memento Mori, Frank Spotnitz explains that, like so many of the supporting characters in the X-Files, Mitch Pileggi's rise on the show was completely unplanned. It was solely due to his strength as an actor. He came on and nobody knew that he would become such an important part of the show, but he was so good that we writers felt inspired to continue to bring him back and back and back. And he really has become a third lead in the TV series. So do you think that, do you agree with that, Clara? Do you think he's definitely important to the show?
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. He's both a support to Mulder and Scully, but also he's almost a bit like a father figure. Or in some scenes, especially in season 2, he's a little bit like a teacher, and you know, more like this like sort of naughty pupil. But yeah, Mitch Pileggi's acting is really brilliant. He's quite subtle sometimes in the way that he acts. So his facial expressions can change just a little bit, you know, which kind of indicates like two different emotions, sometimes conflicting emotions, without really having to say any dialogue. And I think that's quite, I think that's probably quite hard to do as an actor, and I think he does a really good job. He's also got this like physical presence as well, so he's sort of sitting behind his desk or towering over his desk while Mulder's sitting down. He's got this sort of like sort of big physical presence in a room, and I think that's really effective. And it's also nice to see him kick people's ass.
Yes, and I know Mitch Pileggi's father was in the State Department for his job and had or Defense Department, some kind of government job like that.
Yes, he's operations manager for a Defense Department contractor.
Yes. So I know, I can only imagine that he got a lot of that from his dad, and that probably helped inform his character quite a bit. I know on the audio commentary for Apocrypha, Chris Carter also mentioned Skinner's character proved very important to the mythology episodes just because of the role he played, because his loyalties were mixed and strained, and he was always the go-to guy when it came to Mulder and Scully going out on the lam against the wishes of the FBI and Skinner being able to cover for them, reining them in, or suffer the consequences. And then Rob Bowman mentioned that Skinner is certainly an imposing figure, very strong-minded, and a big guy in person. So, Paige, you got to meet Mitch Pileggi, right?
I did, twice.
Yes, twice. I got to meet him once. So nice.
He's wonder, salt of the earth.
Right, exactly. So I don't think there could have been anybody else to play Skinner, for sure, in this series. And also, he got called back a couple of times to read for different parts. Like, they liked him, but they weren't really sure where he was going to fit in. I know that there was a little bit of question as to who he might end up playing, but I'm glad it turned out well in the end.
We all know how nondescript the FBI superiors were before Skinner showed up, and like Chief Blevins, Chief McGrath, they didn't leave much of an impression. But Mitch has talked about this many times in print and in appearances. The last time he went to an X-Files casting session, he had a chip on his shoulder, and he said, in the complete X-Files, I went into the audition with a little bit of an attitude because I had been in and hadn't been cast, and that's exactly what they wanted for the character. So what he later found out was that because his head had been completely shaved before, they thought that was too severe for the show, and so when his hair grew out a little, that's when Rick Milliken, the superstar casting director of X-Files, who always wanted to put Mitch into the show, said, this is our guy. And they did, and it was good.
Yes, and it was good. So, Paige, you're in charge of season one, right? So there's only one episode of Skinner in season one.
I do have some wind-up into that.
Yeah, okay, go for it. Continue, okay. Please.
So it was perfect casting in more ways than one, because Mitch Pileggi got to draw on his personal experiences, and you mentioned his dad, the operations manager for a Defense Department contractor, and Mitch also worked for some defense-related companies in the Middle East before he returned to the United States and started his acting career. And according to the official guide for the X-Files, he was in Turkey during two coup attempts and was one of the last Americans to get out of Iran before that government fell. So this was sort of, you know, kismet in some ways, I think. When you're doing a full series rewatch, it takes so long to get to Skinner's introduction.
It does.
Doesn't it? It's like, where is he? And I think it's funny that we know more about Eugene Victor Toombs than we do about Mulder and Scully's boss at that point.
Well, okay, so when do you think the switch happened? Because, like, when we first, in the pilot, we meet Blevins, and he's a section chief, which is way down the line. And then Mulder and Scully, in doing the X-Files, they get placed under Skinner's direct supervision, and he's third down from the top. Like, assistant director is kind of a big deal, because above that you've got executive assistant directors, they're all kind of on the same level, and then above that you've got the deputy directors and the administrative team and the director, so he's pretty high up. And I don't know exactly what kind of branch Skinner was in charge of, because each of the assistant directors have their own branch. I would guess it was somewhere in, like, the criminal branch or something like that. But yeah, it's kind of a big deal. So Mulder and Scully are, by being directly under his supervision, instead of just a section chief or an operations chief, you know, it's pretty high up. So the X-Files are kind of a big deal, even though they don't really talk about it that much. But there's a reason why they're well known in the FBI, Mulder and Scully, because, you know, these cases are getting investigated at a high level, so they don't even mention his name in Toombs right away. Paige, tell us about the scene when we first meet him.
Okay, I think that when Mitch was able to get through the mouthful that they gave him, they knew they had the right guy for the job. Because he's displeased and he's railing about irregular procedure, untenable evidence, anonymous witnesses, and inconclusive findings aggravated by vague opinion. That is a mouthful. He asks Scully whether she thinks she and her partner should be held to different standards than the rest of the Bureau, and he says, maybe your mind has become too open. Of course, he's saying all this with the cigarette-smoking man literally puffing over his shoulder. She and Mulder have a 75% conviction or case solved rate, which is well above the Bureau standards. So why are they being messed with at all?
Because I don't think it's ever about them being good, and I don't think it's ever about them ever solving something. I think if they solve an X-File, I don't think that the powers that be, you know, so Cigarette Smoking Man and the Syndicate, although at that point we don't know it's the Syndicate, but the powers that be don't really want them solving an X-File. They don't really want them to actually do a good job, because the more they do a good job, the more credible they become, and the more, I guess, people at the FBI will believe what they're saying when they talk about alien conspiracies and stuff like that. So, in a way, it's not really about Mulder and Scully actually doing a good job. It's about discrediting them again and again and again. And I think Cigarette Smoking Man tries to use Skinner to discredit Mulder and Scully. But Skinner is his own man, you see, so... And I think Skinner's actually kind of enticed by the work that Mulder and Scully are doing. He's not going to do it himself. And that's made clear, isn't it, throughout the series. But I think he's intrigued. I always get the feeling that even though he acts a bit exasperated, sometimes I think he's kind of excited when Mulder comes to him with a report of something truly strange. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Yeah.
So my other question about that first scene is why at that exact moment is Scully being called in? Because Mulder is testifying at the hearing for a man who attacked her. And, you know, I already see a drop in case resolution momentum. You know, they're not taking care of the case they already solved. But I think it's supposed to put us on guard a little against Skinner, because if he walked in and he was sugarcoating everything, first of all, I'm not sure we would believe him. We would kind of think he's up to something, because this is going too well, you know? He wouldn't have earned their trust or our trust.
Yeah, I mean, we're not supposed to trust Skinner right away. He's an ally, but he's also not a complete ally. And... it's television. It wouldn't be good drama if we totally believed Skinner and Skinner gave them whatever they wanted. And I think you're also supposed to think Skinner does have pressures above him. So, you know, he it's his job to make sure that Mulder and Scully investigate what they investigate within the rules of the FBI, within procedure, and they follow policy. But also he's being pressured, I think, by people above him to sort of keep them from being too successful. But yeah, it wouldn't make good drama, would it really, if he was completely and utterly their ally? So there's always got to be that uneasy kind of balance between them. But see, I would argue that that kind of exists between Scully and Skinner. I would argue that doesn't exist between Mulder and Skinner as much. I think Mulder, despite the fact he's supposed to be paranoid and suspicious, and despite the fact that people keep talking about him being paranoid, is actually quite a trusting person. And I think he trusts Skinner a lot earlier than Scully does. Especially in season two. Season two is all about, well, it's about many things, but one of the threads that run through it is Skinner and Mulder helping each other, and Skinner and Mulder trusting each other, while at the same time yelling at each other. Repeatedly yelling at each other.
So much yelling.
So much yelling. I love the yelling.
Yeah.
But yeah, it wouldn't be good drama otherwise.
Okay. So then Scully finally makes it to this hearing, and Mulder kind of jumps on her a little, and he says, they've not only reeled you in, they've already skinned you, which I think skinned is a, you know, I always, it's an abrasive word in the face of just meeting Skinner. You know, I always appreciated the use of that word. In this case, he's, you know, saying that, but the next episode, Born Again, is the one where she seems reeled in. She doesn't really seem reeled in. You know, in this one, she's all defending Mulder and going their way rather than the FBI way. In the next one, she kind of gets reeled in a little. So now we're going to get to the money scene. Scully lies about being with Mulder at the time of Toombs' attack, and Skinner wants to speak to Mulder alone. And he calls him one of the finest agents in the FBI's 60-year history. He takes off his glasses and goes into a spiel about how many people think Mulder's talents are wasted on the X-Files, but they respect he's deeply invested in those cases. So, you guys, chime in.
It's the Jesus moment, right?
Chime in on this one.
I think the taking off his glasses and calling him Fox is just... like, what even? I love that scene so much. And Mulder is really kind of being a man baby. I mean, like, I didn't realize it so much. When you're just watching all the episodes together and it's all Mulder and Scully all the time, you don't really realize it. But I went through and I only watched the Skinner scenes in all of these episodes for the first three seasons. Mulder really is a man baby. He just, like, he is really pretty immature and kind of just, I don't know, like, I love how Skinner really tries so hard to keep a rein on him, but it just doesn't work so much. And then, I mean, I feel like Skinner, in all of these scenes in Tombs, he's trying to say what he needs to say and get it across to them that, you know, there's people in the room, like, cigarette smoking man is here in the room, so he can't say what he wants to say, but he's saying everything so carefully. And when you listen closely to his words, you can really pick up on the actual meaning of them. But yeah, I think it goes over Mulder's head. He misses it because he's so focused on himself. He's not focused on the consequences for Skinner at the moment.
He's also quite disrespectful initially, isn't he, Mulder? I mean,
oh, yeah.
In a way, even if Skinner was holding him back and holding his work back and not doing what Mulder wants, he doesn't really have a reason to speak to him the way that he does. And also, he kind of repeatedly, well, throughout the whole series, he repeatedly sort of challenges Skinner's authority in front of other agents, which I don't think is really ever appropriate. And sometimes Skinner will sort of turn that on its head. Like, he will call out Mulder in front of a bunch of other agents. And I think you're supposed to think he's doing that publicly so that it's seen at the FBI that he's not favoriting Mulder. And he's, as like a show, like, he's acting for it. But also he wants to make it clear that people shouldn't be challenging his authority. Cause he is Mulder's boss. You know, so
he's not totally off base when he points out that Mulder is acting inappropriately by disregarding directives, and then he gets Scully, you know, to do inappropriate things as well. And like Clara just said, he's the boss and he has his orders, and Mulder and Scully have orders from him, and there's a procedure that should be followed. And because we're so much in the Mulder and Scully vein, we're like, well, what are you talking about? But you can't just go off willy-nilly and do whatever you want. You have a job. This isn't, you know, your detective firm.
Yeah, they're not private detectives, are they? They're in the Federal Bureau of Investigation. There are rules. And, you know, Mulder is famous for not going by the book. And his unconventional investigations, while that's successful, it's not necessarily going to be able to help him in the long run. And I wonder if Mulder and Scully had been more like Skinner and had paid closer attention to what he was trying to do and actually tried to get to know him a little bit better, I wonder how things might have changed for them in the X-Files and how things might have been different in their investigations.
All right, let me wrap up season one by just giving you a Mitch quote. He said, in The Complete X-Files, initially he was there to be pretty much a roadblock to what they were doing, and eventually, because of who he was and his nature, he understood what was happening, that these two were being dumped on and railroaded.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's true. Yeah, definitely. He definitely changes his tune from, like, season one to season two, and then in season three, he's much more supportive, isn't he?
Yes, yes. All right, so we're ready for season two.
Season two, Clara, so you're up.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of Skinner in season two, actually.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, so he first appears in Little Green Men, and he's not really an ally, but he's also not really an enemy. And part of that is because Mulder's gone missing. Well, he's gone to South America. I think it's South America, isn't it? To go and investigate the station where the they were just recording the sounds from space, which obviously supposedly recording sort of alien contact. And there's a really good scene in this episode where he's talking to cigarette-smoking man, listening to a recording of an interview that they've done with Scully to try and figure out where Mulder is. And cigarette-smoking man, despite the fact that obviously he's supposed to be this like evil genius, doesn't seem to quite understand Scully's motivations like Skinner does. And so he sort of says, you know, so Scully doesn't actually know where Mulder is, and Skinner believes her. And cigarette-smoking man's like, well, why do you believe her? And he's like, well, she wouldn't sound so frightened if she knew where he was, because she's worried about Mulder. So I thought it was quite interesting that he understands Scully's motivations early on. Like, he understands that Scully is... her loyalty is completely lies with Mulder, and she's actually going to do whatever it takes to, you know, I don't know, work with him, find him, keep him safe, that kind of thing. He's definitely being pressured by Cigarette Smoking Man, though.
Yeah, he's a good investigator. I mean, he's a assistant director for a reason, I think. You know, I would like to know more about his life in the early days of the FBI and how he got to his position. I think that would be a great TV show. Yeah. But, you know.
young Skinner.
Yeah. And I like when in that episode when he's got the cigarette smoking man in there and he goes, I don't smoke. And I feel like that's where he's like looking directly at cigarette smoking man. And he's like, I don't smoke. And that's another one of the things that I love about, like, that's his double speak where he's, you know, he's saying the words, I don't smoke, but really he's saying, I'm not on your team, and I'm not going to play like that. So,
yeah, and in this episode, later on, he does actually throw cigarette-smoking man, or he tries to, throw him out of his office. So he's telling Mulder off for leaving his assignment, which was basically crappy surveillance assignment, and he sort of reprimands him for defying orders. But he also recognises that Mulder might be right about something, because Mulder sort of says, like, I could have arrested the people that I was surveilling, like, 3 days into surveilling them, and you prevented me from doing it. Basically, you're stalling me. You're keeping me on these dead-end assignments. And cigarette-smoking man kind of comes up and is like, hee-hee, you know, you're out. You're out of the FBI, which is even more creepy now that you know that CSM is Mulder's father. But at the time, obviously, I didn't know when I first watched this. But, you know, he's like kind of gloating over him. And I like how Skinner then kind of defends Mulder. So Skinner's going to tell Mulder off, but he's not going to let anyone else do it.
Exactly.
Which is quite protective, really.
And then he actually kicks CSM out of his office. And then, you know, by telling Mulder that he wants him to stay on the surveillance and keep doing that, Skinner in his own way is trying to keep him safe because he knows that there are bigger things at play here. And so he's still trying to protect Mulder in the only way that he knows how at this point, or that he can, and still toe the line. But yeah, so I really like those scenes.
Similarly, in The Host, which is the episode after that, he gives Mulder this case of this dead body in the sewers, doesn't he? And I don't know whether or not this is true, but I interpreted it as Mulder just sees this as a crappy assignment, but Skinner suspects there might be something else. And so it's like he's giving him an X-file under the radar.
I mean, I have in my notes, Skinner hands Mulder an X-file on a silver platter and he throws it back in his face like the giant man baby he is. That's what I wrote in my notes. I mean, he's like, Skinner is literally doing everything that he possibly can to stay, you know, work within the lines of his position and his influence of the FBI and still give Mulder and Scully a boost and help them out and do what he can to get the X-Files investigated. And, you know, it just makes me crazy that they're so clueless about it. Skinner admits to Mulder that he knows the strangeness of the criminal and the crime are not lost on him. And he admits to Mulder that it should have been an X-File. And he says that we all take orders from someone, Agent Mulder. And then I have in my notes, like, ah! He's flat out telling you he's on your side. I mean, do you think Mulder and anything would have been different if Mulder had met Sharon Skinner earlier and they had talked about how closed off Walter Skinner is? And they had, like, got it. Do you think she could have, like, gotten them on his side and things would have been different at all? Because I feel like that's a kind of a moment that they could have shared over you know, burgers on the back porch. Like, he had had them over for dinner. I don't know, Paige, what do you think?
Well, I agree, but, you know, it's a really nice build, and we're getting, like, pieces of him. We're seeing he's smarter than his superiors that we had seen before. We're getting more from him than we were getting from them, so it's a really nice build to get there.
What do you guys think of the scene in The Host where Mulder's sort of having a go at him in the doorway of his office, and then Skinner invites him into the office, and there's a whole bunch of people sitting there?
Yeah. That happens more than once, I think, in the whole series. Yeah, that's a common occurrence. With Scully, too, you know, that they start going off because they're so mad at him, and then he's like, welcome into my office. Please see what's going on here. Do you understand why I'm saying the things that I'm saying? Because there's an audience, and I have to say the words and hope that you understand, which clearly you do not. But, oh, yeah. Also, yeah, I love that scene.
Also, the scene later on in this episode where, I mean, is there a sort of, like, is it sort of standard for the FBI to have, like, in the FBI to have meetings where the boss reads the report and the agent just sort of sits there and watches his boss read his report? Because Skinner's reading through the report and Mulder's just sort of sitting there, and I get the feeling that's been going on for quite a while, for like at least 20 minutes, maybe half an hour. Surely Skinner would read the report that Mulder submitted and then they would discuss it afterwards or something. But it's like he's reading it while Mulder's sitting there, almost like a teacher. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's like, and Mulder's sort of sitting there fidgeting. That doesn't seem like standard FBI procedure to me. I thought maybe Skinner's kind of doing that deliberately.
It might be, yeah. That would make sense that he's sort of having him report and, you know, keep him in line. Maybe that's his way of keeping him in line.
So after The Host, we have Sleepless. And in this episode, I don't think both Mulder and Skinner are acting like they don't really trust each other. But Skinner still helps Mulder. And Mulder still goes to Skinner for help. There was a weird bit where Mulder sort of says, oh, I had a source, but he's dead, or whatever he says. And Skinner looks a little bit guilty. And I was wondering, sort of, does Skinner feel, like, anyway responsible or sort of sad about Deep Throat's death? But then I was kind of unsure how they are connected. I didn't think they'd actually ever meet each other, or maybe he would just hear about it in a report or something.
I'm not sure, but I did notice that. And I was wondering about that, too. I was actually going to ask you guys about that. I wonder if it's just that, I mean, because in Tombs, you know, Skinner says you have all these, he knows about Mulder's contacts. And he's like, 1,000 contacts in Washington aren't going to be able to save you if you don't get in line or whatever. And I think even if he doesn't know who Deep Throat is or about Deep Throat, I think he would know that Mulder has contacts. Because Skinner's got his own unofficial channels. But there's nothing to say or suggest that Deep Throat wasn't also helping Skinner at some point either. And maybe he didn't even know that he was also helping Mulder. This is why we need another show, to find out all this stuff. We need the spinoff. We need the Skinner spinoff. Because I need to know all these things. I need to know the answers to this. But yeah.
It would be interesting to see what Skinner's doing, like, when he's not, you know, in the office, like, reprimanding Mulder. It'd be interesting to see how often Cigarette Smoking Man is in his office. If he's in his office all day long while he makes phone calls, you know, like,
yeah,
do you know what I mean, talks to his wife on the phone or something, or whether Cigarette Smoking Man just sort of pops in whenever Mulder's going to be in there.
When he invites himself to dinner.
Yeah.
Well, Walter, what are you having for dinner tonight? That sounds good. I might join you. In his creepy cigarette smoking way. But yeah, how about Ascension? That's a good episode.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, Ascension, Skinner's like leading the investigation to Scully's kidnapping. He seems quite concerned about Mulder, and he's quite firm and quite loud. But Mitch Pileggi does this thing where he sort of barks out something at Mulder because he's frustrated, and his voice is he seems quite aggressive. And then almost in the same sentence, he sort of lowers his voice and sort of softens it. So it's like he's sort of like, I'm giving you an order, but it's because I'm concerned about you. You know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of sort of softer, which always makes me go, oh. What about you guys?
Such a good actor.
Like, do you sort of get that sense as well? Or
I do. Yeah, because especially from the quote, Mulder says, maybe it's because I find it so hard to trust anybody. And then Skinner looks right at CSM. And then he goes back to Mulder, and he's like, I can't protect you, Agent Mulder. You've passed a point in this. It's going to be a larger bureau matter. So that's clear to me that he's saying one thing and doing another in his head. But yeah.
There's a lot of concern. There's concern for Mulder, and there's concern for Scully. And we learn more about how closed off he is later, but we know he's processing it. And then he does the best possible thing he could do at the end of the episode. He reopens the X-Files, saying that's what they fear the most.
Do you think it's possible that at any point Skinner thinks that Mulder might have really killed Dwayne Barry? Because he's questioning him a little bit like he does, but I couldn't really read what his kind of thoughts were about it. I was wondering what you guys thought.
I don't think he thinks that, but he's got to do it. The questioning from a, you know, as a supervisor, that's what he's got to find out everything he can about what happened. I'm not so sure that it isn't Mulder's fault, because I didn't see Krycek do anything, and I saw, you know, Mulder shake the stuffings out of him.
Yeah. Well, didn't he say that it's poison or something?
Well, he insinuated it could be poison, you know, but if, well, we saw Krycek talking to Dwayne Barry. We didn't see any evidence of anything else. He wasn't touching or, you know, whatever. Mulder was physically abusing the guy, and he thinks he's not responsible at all for his death. You know, I would have a guilty conscience personally.
But like you said, I think, you know, Skinner, I think even if Skinner does or doesn't believe it, I don't think that he wants to believe that Mulder would be capable of something like that. But it is about Scully. And honestly, I mean, I don't even know if Skinner had been in the room with Dwayne Barry alone. I mean, would he have not done the same thing? I don't think so. I think he would have been rough with them.
That's probably true. But now I have a picture of a poster in Skinner's office that says, I don't want to believe.
He seems quite unsettled in this episode, especially when Skinner talks about, when Mulder talks about Krycek. He seems quite unsettled because, and he almost believes Mulder almost right away, doesn't he? Well, he sort of questions him a little bit, but I was quite surprised how quickly he sort of believed Mulder when Mulder was like, Krycek is on the side of the devil, you know? So I was quite surprised by that.
I was wondering if CSM put Krycek into position through Skinner, if that makes sense. Like, if CSM came to Skinner and was like, you have to have this guy be the assigned. And so that would make a lot of sense if he felt guilty about that, because I think he would blame himself in part for Scully's abduction if he did what he was told. He's technically following the book, you know, if CSM is supposedly his superior somehow or influencing him somehow through these unofficial channels, you know, why wouldn't he have been the instrument to get Krycek into place? So he knows now that Skinner knows that he himself is now a pawn, and that's not okay with him. It really bothers him, I think. And so I think that's where that guilt comes from.
Also, another thing that really struck me about this episode, and actually it's one of the things that I constantly find like interesting, is that throughout the series of the X-Files, it's called, you know, the tagline is trust no one, right? We're supposed to sort of take Mulder as this paranoid person who doesn't trust anyone. And he repeatedly says, I don't trust anybody, I only trust Scully. But it's just not true. Like, if someone comes to Mulder with information, he trusts them. You know, he's constantly trusting people. And he's always trusting people when it's not the right time to trust people and they shouldn't trust people. And he's often getting in trouble because he does trust people. And I was really struck that in Ascension, at the end of it, he basically tells Skinner his entire theory about what happened with Scully. And he just lets it all out. Like, he doesn't hold anything to his chest. He doesn't keep anything close, doesn't keep anything kind of quiet. The only time he sort of doesn't tell Skinner stuff is because he wants to go do something he doesn't think Skinner will let him do. But otherwise, he's constantly just letting it all spill out as soon as he hits Skinner's office. And I was like, well, if you're not sure about Skinner, and his connection to the cigarette smoking man, what are you doing telling him everything? But Mulder does trust Skinner, I would say. So,
he does.
It's not just about the fact that whether or not Skinner trusts Mulder, it's about also about how Mulder feels. And he's a lot more than Scully does. He trusts him a lot more than Scully does.
Yeah, and I think that's important. Yeah, like what you said about him just immediately trusting Skinner, I think, I don't know if he's just so exhausted and he's gotten literally to the end of his rope and he just doesn't have anywhere else to go, and that's why he tells Skinner all that stuff, or if maybe he genuinely believes that Skinner really is going to be able to help him on this, which really bothers me later on, because if he feels that way at that point, what changes later on down the road in the series? But we're only here to talk about seasons 1 through 3, so we're not going to go down that road. But it becomes an everlasting theme in the show. But yeah. So next up we have One Breath. Loaded episode. A lot going on here.
Yeah, Skinner starts out immediately asserting his independence from Cigarette Smoking Man by having an absolutely huge no smoking sign in the middle of his desk. It's like a
scathing look. Yes.
It's like the biggest no smoking sign I've ever seen on someone's desk. You know, it's probably even bigger than his own. You know, they have those little like signs on their desk for their names. So it's like it's like he's taking the name sign away and put no smoking there, like. And then Cigarette Smoking Man just lights up anyway. So I really felt like Skinner actually really wanted to find out what happened to Scully. So what did you guys think? Do you think he really wants to know, doesn't he?
I love, and this is a recurring theme, especially in season 2, how he says point blank he won't help and then he helps. That is, you know, because whether it's because there's someone else in the room or because he thinks he's being listened to, basically all they have to do is walk in the door and tell him what they want. They don't have to argue with him about it because he's just going to do it anyway.
Right.
In this episode, Cigarette Smoking Man talks to Mulder about him becoming a player, but I think Skinner is the one becoming the player in this episode.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I love how he says, we're not the mafia. What are you going to do? We're not the mafia. Who's he going to go sleep with the fishes?
What do you think of that conversation, though? Like, what do you think of the fact that he sort of says, well, you know, you knew the game. You know, you shouldn't play if you don't want to. Because that's kind of a bit of a mean thing to say to Mulder, isn't it? It sort of makes him feel guilty about the fact that, like.
Yeah, he puts him in his place, and I think it's well deserved, to be honest. He flat out says, you're as much to blame in this as Cancer Man. If you knew the consequences and you got Scully into this, and, you know, it wasn't. I think that between the two, he admires Mulder's drive, but he respects and cares about Scully more. I think he's protective over Mulder, but I really think that he is more looking out for Scully for her sake than he's looking out for Mulder for the sake of Scully, if that makes sense, more than Mulder.
I think he's looking out for them both. I mean, he really respects Mulder for the brain power that he has and the drive that he has, and maybe even being able to be open where Skinner is not. You know, maybe he respects that ability that he has to do that. But he's a gentleman, and also he's probably doing a little bit of I must protect my female agent thing.
And then he does talk about that when he comes to Mulder in the basement and they have that conversation that Mulder. It makes me crazy because he doesn't really seem to take him seriously until he really starts to get into the story. And he's like, wait, I actually better pay attention to this because it's what he's saying is truly important for once. You can kind of see him shifting through the scene. And this is actually the longest Skinner scene so far in the entire series up to this point. It's a whole 4 minutes he was on screen. But,
And he takes his glasses off. You know that something, that he's going to get vulnerable. And he's going to say something personal when he takes his glasses off.
Exactly.
You know, so
another come to Jesus moment. But like he flat out says, you're not allowed to quit right now. And you know, he's letting Mulder know that there are more important priorities, and he's not going to find the truth by quitting. And he tells about his experience, you know, in Vietnam and getting shot at 18 years old and nearly dying. Actually, he did die. He says that he thinks he did die. He says every life, every day is in danger.
Now that is, that's letting him off the hook for what he said earlier.
Yeah.
But what he need, you know, what he wants to do is appreciate Mulder's efforts, but he wants to point out that you're not always doing it the right way. Not just according to FBI standards, but according to what is right for you, what is right for mankind, if you will. You know, he lets him off the hook after he punished him a little, you know, not like with a strap or anything, but he admonished him, and now he's saying that just be aware of these things when you do these things, that you could have consequences like what happened to Scully.
In the pilot episode, we get Mulder telling Scully about his sister and how he believes that she was abducted. Now, this is kind of Skinner's moment to explain himself and why he's doing what he's doing. And I hate that it comes so late. Like, why couldn't we have gotten this earlier? But, I mean, it, you know, that's frustrating. But how do you think that his experience and his Vietnam, you know, this thing that he tells Mulder about, how do you feel that shaped his search for the truth? Like, Mulder's on his own quest for the truth. What do you think that Skinner sees is the truth, and how do you think that his personal experiences with the supernatural shaped how he's going about his life and what he's trying to find out?
From what he says, is that it's something that he's frightened to look into. So I'm not sure he is really on a quest, supernatural wise. He says he lost his faith really in Vietnam, doesn't he? He signed up because he really believed in the cause. He believed in his government. He believed in his country, and he sort of lost his faith really in all those things when he was about 18, which is quite young to lose sort of that sort of faith and that belief. And he also had this out-of-body death experience, and he shot this little boy. So it's a lot to deal with. It's almost like it's quite a lot of trauma, to be honest. And so I think for him, and because he is so closed off, like you said, I think for him a lot of it is fear of having to deal with those memories, having to deal with that situation, having to think about whether or not that was a supernatural experience and how he survived and that kind of thing. Whereas Mulder's not frightened. Mulder's frightened for Scully's safety. He's frightened of losing Scully. He's frightened of losing the X-Files. He's frightened of never finding his sister. But he's not frightened of exploring the paranormal or exploring his feelings about it. He's very impulsive. He's very emotional. Skinner's very reined in, much more sort of restrained. And I think that in that scene, you really get the sense that Skinner admires Mulder for his freedom, really, in going out and investigating these things. So it's almost a little bit like it's a switch, because in previous episodes he's been very much in a position of power, position of authority. By going down to the basement, he's coming down to Mulder's level. By taking off his glasses, he's sort of taking off the mask that he wears as the assistant director and revealing himself to Mulder. And what he reveals is that Mulder is the one who's going to find the answers for Skinner, if that makes sense. Mulder is the one who is perhaps maybe braver in this situation, and he sort of admires him for it. So it's almost like a show of vulnerability, which I thought was really amazing, actually. And I agree with you, it hasn't really, why we didn't have it before now, but it had to happen around the time that Scully isn't there, because Mulder doesn't need that kind of bolstering if he's got Scully. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't need Skinner to say this stuff to him, because Scully would never let him quit. So yeah, Scully has to be either gone or in danger or something.
I think that when he starts this scene and he talks about enlisting in the Marine Corps, he was as idealistic as Mulder is now then at that time. That's what he really wanted to do. He really wanted to go to Vietnam and defend his country and fight for his ideals, and he lost that. And Mulder sort of gives him that back, and I think that's one of the things he appreciates in Mulder.
Yeah, I think that it's definitely a valuable scene, and probably one of the most valuable scenes to establish Skinner's character, because then, you know, in the next season, he sort of backs off a little bit. But, yeah, we'll get to that.
Don't worry, guys. There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. This is just me popping in, Tony, because the Skinner episode was so long, but so good. I decided to split it into two parts. So this is a cliffhanger moment for the discussion just at the end of All Things Skinner from seasons 1 to 3. And Sarah, Clara and Paige will be back next week to continue the voyages into the mind of the Skin Man. So until then, always remember, trust no one. The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support The X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXcast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/TheXcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I Am Will A Y E.